The mountain, known as Mandara, which was extremely heavy, made of gold, being made of gold, fell and smashed many demigods and demons. Purport. By constitution, gold is heavier than stone. Since Mandara Mountain was made of gold and was therefore heavier than stone, the demigods and demons could not properly carry it to the ocean of milk. Tamstata bhagna manaso bhagna bahuru kandaran vignaya bhagavamstatra bahuva garuda dvajaha. The demigods and demons were frustrated and disheartened, and their arms, thighs and shoulders were broken. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who knows everything, appeared there on the back of his carrier Garuda. So now we're on to 37. Observing that most of the demons and demigods had been crushed by the falling of the mountain, the Lord glanced over them and brought them back to life. Thus they became free from grief, and they even had no bruises on their bodies. Translation. The Lord very easily lifted the mountain with one hand and placed it on the back of Garuda. Then he too got on the back of Garuda and went to the ocean of milk, surrounded by the demigods and the demons. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Here is proof of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is above everyone. There are two classes of living entities, the demons and the demigods, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is above them both. The demons believe in the chance theory of creation, whereas the demigods believe in creation by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The omnipotence of the Supreme Lord is proven here, for simply with one hand he lifted Mandara Mountain. The demigods and demons placed them on the back of Garuda and brought them to the ocean of milk. Now the demigods, the devotees, would immediately accept this incident, knowing that the Lord can lift anything. However it may be, but although demons were also carried along with the demigods, demons, upon hearing of this incident, would say that it is mythological. But if God is all-powerful, why would it be difficult for him to lift the mountain? Since he is floating innumerable planets with many hundreds and thousands of Mandara mountains, why can't he lift one of them with his hand? This is not mythology, but the difference between the believers and the faithless is that the devotees accept the incidents mentioned in the Vedic literatures to be true, whereas the demons simply argue and label all these historical incidents mythology. Demons would prefer to explain that everything happens, or everything happening in the cosmic manifestation takes place by chance, but demigods our devotees never consider anything to be chance. Rather, they know that everything is an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the difference between the demigods and the demons. Om Aganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam yena bhutale, Swayam rupa kadamayam ladati sva vedantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Scha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Taptakanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama
Hare Rama, Rama 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 Hare Hare. So there's a section of the Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna is saying Sarvasya Chaham Ridisanivishto Matakspritir Ma Obahanam Cha Vedista Sarvaham Eva Vidyo Vedanta Krid Vedavit Eva Chaham, that he's the more or less controlling everything. And then it goes on in the next verses, he's the source of remembrance, forgetfulness, what else? And knowledge. Nothing exists without the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's actually the difference between a demon and the demigods. The demigods, the more we appreciate that actually there's nothing besides Krishna, then the more we're a devotee, and the more we can't appreciate how things are related to Krishna, the more we become we have a materialistic vision. And materialistic vision means we tend to misuse that energy of the Lord and we become demoniac by nature. And so the following three verses are called the Tri Shloki Shastra. And it's explaining about the Supreme. Well, the first three verses are actually called by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that they're Sambandha Gyan, knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're explaining about the fallible, as it says here, and the infallible. So there's only one real infallible. Everybody else is fallible. And that's Krishna. But when we take shelter of Krishna, we become infallible. This is the difference. And so there are the Nitya Siddha devotees who are always taking shelter of Krishna. And then there are Nitya Badas living entities who are always failing to do that. And so always they're defeated. As we see in this pastime, eventually the demigods will be defeated. So this is the key to success in devotional life, is to understand that we're fallible. But the tendency is, even in the material world, everybody thinks they're infallible. Everybody comes to power for some time and they don't seem to realize that here today, gone tomorrow. Few short years to live. Usually they're in the later age when they get to power and they're on the decline. But somehow or other, the material energy makes them think that I'm going to carry on. They say Stalin. Nobody really knew what he did until after the war. They started to build in Moscow, just like they built for Lenin, a tomb. And then when it came out what Stalin was like, they didn't build it anymore. Because he was just a rascal. He was so much on the infallible side, actually, that he got some disease, and then they took him to the physicians to operate, but he was so, what's the word? When we're so frightened, we're so paranoid. He was so paranoid that he wouldn't take the anaesthetic, and they operated on him while he was completely conscious. But this is the determination of a demon, that we can go through all that. And this is what people do in this world. They fight the material energy so much, but eventually the material energy becomes too powerful. And that's happened to all the great leaders in the past. There's Napoleon, who else is there? Hitler, Stalin, and there'll be... Eh? Mussolini, he wasn't so big, was he? He was like hanging on the shirt tails of the Nazis. Then the next verse is talking about, well, once we understand who Krishna is, then we can engage in devotional service. And so a lot of the Bhagavad Gita is there's three different chapters which are explained about the potencies of the Supreme Lord and his energies. You know, it's a lot of Bhagavad Gita just explaining this point. So we can come to that point where we can appreciate Krishna. When we appreciate the greatness of somebody, naturally we become very much attracted. Has anybody noticed that? If we find somebody who's really beautiful, it's very easy to become attracted. If somebody's really opulent, we can very easily become attracted. Somebody who's very famous, I'm sure if somebody who's very famous, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people would be, if he walked in the temple now, they'd be thinking, maybe I should go and see him before. See him in real life. I can hear Bhagavatam tomorrow. So we're attracted to these things. And yet, maybe we're not so attracted to Krishna. Maybe we get little fleeting glimpses. I don't know, maybe devotees on different levels than me. But it's like very difficult to become attracted to Krishna. I remember when I was reading the Science of Self-Realization, we were talking about this yesterday. We had a meeting and we were talking about how we came to the movement. And eventually, I had the Science of Self-Realization for about six or seven years. And then I eventually started reading it, and I was really interested, but not about Krishna. So many things. I used to get the reincarnation. Wow. Then another section on vegetarianism. Wow, this is interesting. Then you got to Krishna. And it's still there to some degree. We come to the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's pastimes. Or we come to a section where it's... But this is all important, because until we get attracted to that, it's difficult to make progress in devotional service. Prabhupada says that, doesn't he, in the Bhagavad Gita? Vishayavini vartante niharashirenam raso varjim rasopyasha param drishva nivartate. So we're attracted to sense gratification. And this vishayavini vartante, but we have to become... what's that? Higher taste? Raso vajim rasopyasya param drishtva. So this higher taste is the difficulty in devotional service, the real difficulty. We may think that in the beginning we do an 180 degree turn, most of us. I mean, one devotee we'll listen to, his family were a Vaishnav family, extremely rare. But most of us, we may not come from that advantageous situation, so it's a complete turnaround to take up devotional service. And therefore, we feel elated that now we're going the right way and Krishna gives us so much of a taste. And then maybe we expect that to carry on, that this will always be there. And then at some point, we wonder why maybe it's not as joyful as what it was in the beginning. And so this is where the work comes in, where we have to become devotional service has to become internalized. And internalization is not easy, because that's where the real knot in the heart is. We're very much attached to our material understanding of the world and how it should be utilized. And so this comes from, it says that the demigods, they were approaching the infallible situation because they depended on Krishna. And as I think Chandramouli Swami was saying yesterday, he said this is a real happy situation when we feel completely helpless, when we know that there's no other shelter except Krishna. When we're actually in that situation, then we can start to become dependent. And when we're dependent, then we become infallible. While ever we're dependent on our own strength, at some point our intelligence won't keep us going any longer, we'll be limited. Our strength will diminish at some point. I remember the temple president in Manchester. I used to be really, really go for it. And physically, because I was physically strong. They're trying to do so much in a day. And you could see there was some pride there. We got all different. Some of us are more physical and some of us are more mental. Some of us more managerial. But it says, at any moment, Krishna can just take everything away from you. And you can be just, completely paralyzed. He didn't do that, actually, but I'm realizing now that it's a slow death. Gradually the body's getting older, becoming more dependent. This is Krishna's arrangement. We're more dependent on others, it makes us humble. We're more dependent, we have to become more dependent on help from others. And so a devotee, really, if he's intelligent, he can understand that position in the beginning, that this is a sign of advancement, that actually I need help. And one way we can become infallible is to take shelter of the infallible. But is it easy to take, as we're saying, it's not easy to understand Krishna and become related to Krishna. And so the intermediate process is to take shelter of the devotees of Krishna. If we take shelter of the devotees of Krishna, then very, very quickly we can become dependent on Krishna. And so this is where there's one book called The Nectar of Instruction. And I think is it 11 verses? 11 verses. And I can't remember, there's probably three, maybe four verses are relating to relationships between devotees. And then, you know, it covers the whole gambit of devotional service from the beginning stage, when we have a little faith, right through to becoming completely perfect and living in Radha Kund. And yet, four of those verses, what percentage is that? 40%, something like that. Just under 40%. And about relating to devotees. Why? Because when we get to the spiritual world, what's the situation? We're relating to devotees, we're relating to Krishna. And so real advancement in devotional service is how a devotee is able to relate to others on the spiritual platform. It's not necessarily that we're so much fixed in knowledge. This is a preliminary thing. It's not so much that we can achieve so many things. But a devotee is one who's understanding that I'm dependent on the other devotees, and therefore, although this is a little bit wanting something for oneself, therefore I need to reciprocate with them nicely. This is where I'm getting my energy from. The tendency is we're impersonalists by nature, because this world's an impersonal world, and the more we become materialistic, the more impersonal it becomes. I mentioned this many times that, you know, we just look at the buildings that people are building nowadays. They haven't time to put some personality into it. It's boxes. You know, people finish up as boxes also, you know. And so we're impersonal. So impersonal means that I don't need anybody else. And I need somebody as long as they can supply what I need. But as soon as I get what I want, then plop, we step on the head and go a stage further. Prabhupada mentions that. This is what the Mayavadis do. Isn't it? They Panchopasanam. They worship the five deities, brother Shiva, Ganesh, Durga, Vishnu, and Brahma. Because they're powerful living entities. But then when they come up to that platform, then they just shove them aside and carry on. And so we can think, you know, a devotee is really mindful of that. If he wants to remain healthy in devotional service, that I'm dependent on the devotees around me. Prabhupada gives the example of a stick, doesn't he? Very easily one stick's broken. But in the association of other devotees, we're very, very strong. And we don't know which devotee is going to actually be the one who's maybe get us out of a difficult situation. The ones that we see when we're doing well and don't really give credence to, that's most likely the one that will help us in a difficult situation. Krishna knows every little bit of attachment which is in the heart. And guaranteed, whatever we're attached to, we'll find difficulty with that attachment. Krishna will focus on that. If we're attached to his body in any way, shape or form, we'll see the body start to give us problems. If we're attached to the mind in any way, shape or form, our intelligence, we'll find in some difficult moment it lets us down. But as Chandramouli Maharaj was saying, this is actually a very, very advantageous situation. It's very positive. Because devotee's not after trying to make some progress externally in devotional service. He's trying to purify himself. He's trying to see what needs to be done. There's no time to look anywhere else. So this is the focus of the demigods. The demigods are now completely convinced that they need the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now the demons, they're showing this demoniac tendency. I need some help for the time being. And as soon as I don't need it, then I can do what I want. And that's what they will do. They will try to befriend the demigods. They need association. They realize I can't do it. They befriend the demigods. And then at the right moment, they'll turn their back on the demigods. I had a point to make there, actually, but I forgot what it was. Mahatman asked a man partho, Adayavim Prakriti Ashrita, Bhajanti Anya Manaso. What's that? Gatfabhutim. Avyayam. This is the. How do we become a demigod? A devotee is a demigod by nature. How do we become a. It says that they're always. Mahatma, a great soul, is one who's always dependent on Krishna in every aspect of his devotional service. And why would he become? What does Prabhupada say? He's a pure devotee. What was the lowest definition he gave? He gave many definitions. He's what? Well, that's a really elevated. If we can think like that, then we're very well situated. Servant of the servant of the servant. But Prabhupada said, if we go on. One who chants Hare Krishna once. He does mention that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that he's a devotee. And then he does mention that one who's chanting is able to attract, one who's whose very association makes other devotees want to chant. That's a Havanayan understanding. But he said it's quite simple. He says we can attain the transcendental platform if we chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles properly. He says that those activities that we perform after that are not material activities. They are actually transcendental activities. Of course, we're at different levels, but the tendency is that you're on the transcendental platform. Because we're following Prabhupada's instructions, then Krishna's actually supporting us. So it's quite easy to come to this platform. Well, it may be quite easy for some. But it's not a difficult thing if we really think about it. So omnipotence, that was the next stage here. So we were saying that Krishna's Vishaya and we're Ashraya. We take shelter of Vishaya. He's the shelter of all potencies. And if we analyse the Brahma Samhita, everything is glorifying Krishna's potencies, almost nearly every verse, especially from the, what is it, the 34th or 35th verse. I'll just read some of the potencies that are being explained. That is inside and is outside everything. This is one potency. It is that which anything we see, that's Krishna's energy. So this more or less says everything. And then whatever qualities a person has, Krishna gives those qualities. Whatever spiritual advancement and position in devotional service, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhuri Ras, Krishna gives that position. Lord Brahma is like he says that he's just like alive as the one breathing of the Mahavishnu. That's his significance. And that with Lord Brahma's power, he's getting his energy from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahavishnu is just an expansion of Krishna. Lord Shiva, he's milk turned into yogurt. Durga, she's just a shadow of Krishna's energy. Anymore. Lord Brahma is like a candle. Krishna's the original candle. Oh, the whole Brahma Samhita is about Krishna's energy. And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy. You'd think when Lord Chaitanya is so elevated, that he'd find some really esoteric, but he did find some esoteric verses and was in ecstasy. But when he found the Brahma Samhita in South India, he was ecstatic, because this is the key to making, to understanding personality. The sun is getting its light from Krishna. The nine different elements are all coming from Krishna. Krishna's giving the karma to the Indra Gopa German to Indra, and he's taking away the karma from the devotees. So not a blade of grass moves without the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the this is my understanding from this verse, is that we have to take shelter. We cannot avoid taking shelter of anything in this world. We either take shelter of our own abilities. When we're younger, we tend to do that. Our own mind, our own intelligence. Or we can take shelter of the devotees of Krishna. Then we can take shelter of Krishna. This is the real sign of progress in devotional service. Because then, Krishna is also... When we take shelter of the devotees, we take shelter of Krishna, then we become empowered. But then what's the problem? We become empowered. Then we think we're the one who's empowering. We're working under our own steam. And so it's difficult. But Prabhupada said that, you know, I have no qualification for really... My godbrothers are far more erudite than myself. They're far more spiritually elevated. His only qualification is that he took shelter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very, very sincerely. And he was always thinking that his spiritual master was with him. He was never thinking he was doing anything himself. So therefore he became very much... I mean, this is the external understanding. A lot of people speculate on how Prabhupada really was, but from this point of view, Prabhupada saying that, you know, because he was so dependent on his spiritual authority, then he became so empowered. And so many things happened. He even saw that his disciples were sent by his spiritual master. He never thought he was their master. And so this is the key to success in devotional service, is nimitta matram. We have to become in the mood of being actually a servant. And then when we become a servant, we're properly situated. Prabhupada said, one who's a real servant, he can actually lead. One who tries to be a leader, then it's just limited to a time, place and circumstance. For some time it'll happen. But then at some point, Krishna has to teach that devotee that, actually, you're dependent on me. And then everything becomes possible for that devotee. Prabhupada said he expected all his disciples, everybody, to become spiritual master. Now we can take that in different words. It's not necessarily a Diksha Guru, but there's so many different Shiksha Gurus in ISKCON. And so that's what it means. We become in the mood of being empowered, and then we can actually pass on that empowerment and help others. Is there anything else in this verse? Yeah?
You talked about being dependent on devotees. I was just wondering how you balance being dependent on devotees with being individually self-sufficient, because you mentioned that devotees are fallible. So often when we invest faith in devotees and we become dependent on devotees, and then they undergo weakness, then it affects our inspiration. So how do you be dependent on devotees and feel yourself dependent on their mercy and their strength, and then at the same time just be strong enough to continue on no matter what happens?
Well, sometimes we can see where there's a problem and avoid it. We might think that this person may be conditioned in a certain way. And sometimes we can't. It may be that we're not advanced enough to see that. And so, you know, we have to treat... In the first situation, it's obvious what we should do. We should... Prabhupada says that we take good association. If we see that this association in this respect is not going to really help, then we're very careful not to associate and pick up those same qualities. And so, you know, but on the second point, where we're not sure, then we take the humble role. You know, we let, and then things become revealed. If we're humble, we can, what's that? No, not if we're humble, what's that? If we're tolerant, and we tolerate and we're humble in situations, then things are revealed. We don't flip out and start to do the wrong thing. We have to tolerate the situation sometimes. It's, you know, I mean, many times we may be in a situation where our particular authority may have some material contamination. But Krishna sees fit for that person to be doing that service, and therefore we have to tolerate that. You know, Krishna's purifying everybody. Now, when that situation becomes to the point of affecting our spiritual life, then that's a different thing. It has to be channeled in the right way. We have to give feedback. But every situation is different. It's being independently thoughtful, isn't it? We're independently thoughtful, but we're also seeing that I need the devotees in order to go on in devotional service. Any port in a storm is one. You know, if we're actually stranded and we have no association, we'll associate with somebody who may not be a so fixed up devotee. You know what I mean? In order to get back on our feet. And so we have to I mean, one devotee said we should see with one bad eye and one good eye as well. We have to know what to associate with. It's like Prabhupada. He associated with a doctor who told him that he was doing too much praying and that he should do more exercise. And he took the positive side of that, even though he'd had a few. Prabhupada said, you know, this, what he's saying is actually true. So a devotee has to be like a swan. He has to get the nectar out of each situation. I think that's the best way to put it. And avoid taking the poison. Because, you know, when we're together, I mean, we've all got some material attachments and things we're not so proud about. But does it mean that, you know, we don't associate in order to push on the movement? We have to see that and appreciate that, but, you know, use what's useful in devotional service, be positive. I don't know whether that helps or not.
You said that when we say we have to be dependent on devotees, what that means is rather than an individual devotee, just the concept that I always need to be around devotees, whoever it may be.
Yeah, I think it's appreciation. The point I was trying to make is that if we want to be infallible, then we have to have the positive association and the well wishes of devotees. And the way to do that is that we appreciate devotees. We are appreciative of the association of devotees. And the way to become appreciative of the association of devotees, even if we're not, is to follow the principles of Vaishnava etiquette. Because then by following the proper principle, even though we may think, you know, not much about this particular person, the Vaishnava etiquette is to deal in a respectful way. And therefore, then, we may see something different in that person. We may see a lot more. Krishna may reveal. If that's how we want to see him, Krishna may carry on, let us see that way. We see people as we treat other devotees properly, there's so many things that's revealed to us about that devotee which we couldn't understand before because we're too proud. We think we know it all. Anyway, that's